I don't know about you, but as a working mom for the last 14 years, all I have done is beat myself up about what I thought was how little time I spent with my kids. I'm not there enough for them. I'm not present enough. I'm not enough, period, right? Well, flash forward to a pandemic, and now I have all the together time I ever wanted. Not sure that they want it at this point, but we've had a lot of family time that we never would have had if it hadn't been for the stay-at-home order. And some of it has been amazing, and some of it has been amazingly hard. And I know you get that. They are the best of times, they are the worst of times, and sometimes those times are separated by like 30 seconds. So today I'm bringing back a former guest. Katherine Reynolds Lewis is the author of a book called The Good News About Bad Behavior. She became a parenting expert, from becoming a parent, but also she was a journalist and she started writing about different parenting issues. And in writing articles online, she started to notice certain types of trends. And then she got really interested in the science behind why today's generation of kids is unlike, truly unlike any other generation, and the factors that have gone into the reality that our kids are growing up in a very different world than we are. So flash forward, we're all living in a pandemic. We're all stuck at home, and it's created a lot of friction for a lot of families. So today I'm going to talk to Katherine about where we are, the common issues that a lot of families are running into, and also some strategies on how we can better use this forced together time that we have left before things hopefully go back to normal. She has some really good ideas on how to interact with the kids a little differently, and then also some really good warnings for parents for kids of different ages, because different age groups are handling all of this very differently. There are some kids who it's no big deal. And there are others that it is a very big deal. And so she has some really good insight into how to better navigate that as a parent. Katherine Reynolds Lewis is on Dying to Ask. Who could have predicted that this is where we'd be right now? It's uncharted territory. It's scary. It's, say it with me, unsettling. Hate that word now. And it's here for a while. It's changing how we do or don't do everything. At Dying to Ask, we're going to look for some answers to some of the questions that we're all struggling with as we adapt to our new normal. Everything from how we work at home, how we interact, hello, social distancing, and how we can fight to stay healthy against a threat that for once we cannot Google our way out of. Well, Katherine, I had hoped that the next time we spoke would be because I happened to be in D.C. and we were meeting up for a coffee or a glass of wine.
Oh.
But instead, it's a pandemic.
Yes, not what any of us had planned.
No, not so much. How's your family doing? How are you guys?
We're doing well. Thank you for asking. I think, like many families, we go through phases of, being stressed, being anxious, being very cluttered, and then we get it together and we have wonderful family times and we clean together and we celebrate the silver linings of being, stuck in one place with each other. I feel really grateful that my parents live with us. So I, they are very helpful with my kids, and I'm grateful to be able to know that they're here and they're safe and healthy. And my husband's a doctor, so he's, not on the front lines, but he's certainly helping with the effort, and I'm really proud of him as well.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot for all families. Remind everybody the ages of your kids again.
Sure, my kids are 13, 16, and 27.
Okay, so when you were describing all the different phases of COVIDity or whatever we want to call it, I related to every single one of them. The one that you said that really jumped out at me was cluttered, because that is such a great way to describe, what life kind of feels like these days. I mean, personally, I find I wake up and I know how the day is going to go. Some days are just bad for no real reason, and then other days I wake up with this great optimism and it carries through the day. And I've talked to so many moms who have told me the exact same thing.
Yeah, and in so many ways, we are the foundation of our family's emotional life, right? So sometimes you can just sense that energy that you're at the end of a phase of everyone being positive, and you're leading into a day of people being stir crazy and cranky with each other. And I think it's also really important to remember that some of these things that we're feeling, the irritability or the short temper, or, especially with our children, that can be depression, right? It can be that they're sad, but it comes out as anger.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we sort of sense it coming, even without consciously recognizing what it is.
You know, I absolutely loved your book, and we did an earlier podcast. The book is The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever and What to Do About It. I got so much, and I have to say all of your research really changed the way I looked at my relationship with my kids. And I'm curious to know what your thoughts are based on everything you studied about the way our kids are handling these stay-at-home orders and about how we as parents are interacting with them, because certainly our relationships have never been on display more than they are right now.
Well, thank you so much. It means so much to me that the book had such an impact on you, Deirdre.
Oh, I think of you every single, in fact, I have the book right here in my hand. I left it on my nightstand as a little reminder every single day.
Oh.
So I literally, Catherine, I think of you every single day because you really challenged me in a really great way to think about things in a different way. But that's also why I started thinking, like, I really need to talk to Catherine in the middle of this.
Yeah.
I really need to know, like, what is America doing right now?
Oh, well, thank you. And I think lately I've been feeling that hearing from parents that now that at least here in Maryland, we've been home for a month, right? It's been a full month that we've all been staying at home, and people are either taking one or two paths that are pretty divergent. I think families that had generally good relationships, generally good routines and mutual respect are really finding ways to move through it. And families that hadn't maybe worked out all of those kinks are just having conflict and conflict, or not even conflict, but I've talked to people with teens who don't see their children, even though they're all in the same room, because the kids sleep until 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So maybe they're awake, you know, they eat a little bit and then they go and do their online school or whatever. And so in some ways, I think if you're in a family that's feeling that disconnection when you're all together, that may be a warning signal that this can be an opportunity to create some of those healthy routines and relationship connectedness that will really sustain us and move us from just trying to survive this really difficult time to thriving and to making whatever lemonade we can, right? Where if you're enforced together, it can be very, very difficult, right?
Yeah. It's forced together time.
It's for forced togetherness. And so we need to, first of all, recognize that, right? Acknowledge it with our children, let our kids grieve the things that they are missing right now, and then try to move forward.
You know, one of the things you had talked a lot about when we spoke the last time, you know, in the before times, as I like to call them, was that you really encouraged parents to have a much more collaborative relationship with their kids versus more of a parent as a dominant figure who tells and instructs and sets up the order of things. That kind of collaboration is really what you were just talking about a moment ago. But I'm curious to know, like, what are you hearing people say is happening in their houses right now?
Right. So this is just such a
because I'm sure I'm not the only one who called you for help.
So it's hard. It is so hard. And I'm right there with you with, you know, my two kids here and my 27-year-old about 5 miles away in an apartment. But we see her socially distanced in the front yard. So it starts with that connection with the kids, right? It starts with attunement to where they are in that moment. And you build from there. And so a lot of parents are seeing kids be stressed and be anxious, and you need to tend to those emotions. But I'm hearing a lot of parents also saying that their children have never been more stepping up to the plate. They see that we're overwhelmed. They see that it is not possible to work a full-time job and oversee homeschooling and have 3 meals on the table, right? It just is not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So our children who are 5 years old and older, they can help. And that can be such an empowering thing for them. The first couple of weeks, I was trying to do it all. I was trying to do the same usual household things that I do and my job and suddenly be engaged in my kids' learning in a way that I'm not usually engaged. And it was not working. So we sat down on a Saturday and I said, guys, these are the things we usually do around the house. We're fortunate enough that in normal times, every other week, a team of wonderful women come and clean our home, and they are not coming. So what can we do? And I was so moved that my kids immediately spoke up and said, I'll vacuum, I'll sweep. You know, why don't we divide up the meals? And so we divided up the meals. Everyone cooks a different dinner. Mm-hmm. And then we use leftovers. And it's been amazing for them to really have the experience of being genuinely needed.
That's
I am not
setting
up an exercise that will teach them how to cook, right? I genuinely need the help.
Right.
So if we can admit that to our kids and they know it's true, they sense it, but saying it out loud kind of releases the tension. We're not trying to pretend that we are in charge. We genuinely need their help, and our kids will step up if we give them that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it really requires being very vulnerable as a parent. And the truth is, when you are 24/7 with your kids, regardless of what age they are, and you're in one house, there's no hiding. Like,
right.
Like right now, I'm hiding in my closet to record this podcast.
Well, that's the exception.
Truth be told, I hide in here as much as I can. But they know, and you're right, they do feed off of it. And it is better, I think, just to be honest with them and tell them, look, this is the way it is.
And it's a great chance also for everyone in the family to become more aware of our own needs. So if you need to hide or you need to take a walk or you can't have the conversation, we can model for our kids, I'm feeling a little too stressed to manage this right now. So I'm going to take a 10-minute walk. Can we discuss it later? Or, you know, I realize we'd planned for dinner at 6, but I am not there right now. Can we do 6:30? And that shows our kids flexibility, taking responsibility for our own emotions, and moving to a solution. And I've seen my kids now, the first couple of weeks, they were trying to power through their homework. And now at 3 or 4, they realize I have been in front of a screen, right? Mm-hmm. With a video call with my teacher or doing homework. And they're right now out on a bike ride. And they recognize I need that 10-minute study break to go play Frisbee. And that is the best outcome for me, that I'm not the one in there saying, oh, take a study break, but they recognize it themselves.
Yeah, that's great. Well done, Mom. That is good.
Once in a while.
Yeah. No, a win is a win. Take it when they come your way. It's interesting because that's such a great skill for them to have as they get older, when they, you know, go off to college and they have to self-regulate and they have to set their own schedule and they've got to figure out ways to get stuff done. I mean, in some ways, for those older kids, it's a good dry run with some safety nets at independence and taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. And, you know, the kids, at least my kids, have a lot less time, right, in the classroom because it's just not feasible. And especially my 10th grader has only 2 hours a day. And I said, this is kind of like a college schedule where mm-hmm. you're expected to self-manage a lot of the day. So it's okay that you're struggling with it. That would be what I expect of a 16-year-old. You're not ready for college. And these are some things that may help. And so I think experimenting and knowing that it's going to be rocky, yeah. I think even just saying, you know what, it's going to be rocky, but you can learn skills now that are going to help you in life.
Do you think that certain age groups are handling this better kid-wise? And here's why I bring it up. I have two boys. One is 11. The other one is 14. So 5th grade and 8th grade. My 5th grader, as he put it the other day, I am living my best life in quarantine. And he wasn't trying to be smart alecky. He genuinely meant it. He is loving doing online learning. He loves being responsible for his own learning. He loves the fact that the dog is sitting on his bed and he throws treats while he's finishing his work. He loves that he gets to go play and build with Legos. He loves that there are no after-school activities because he can go ride his skateboard or just do nothing at all. He loves playing games with his friends online. It's funny, of all of us in my house, my 5th grader is winning at quarantine. He is happy, he's busy, he's having a great time. The 14-year-old, maybe just developmentally where he is, it's socially much harder to be stuck at home.
Yeah, it's a great question. And there's developmental stages when kids are much more peer-oriented than family-oriented. And absolutely one of those stages, right? Where it's they are wired to want to be with their peer group. And my 16-year-old has been hugging me, right? Which was not frequent in before this. But I think it's because they even just need that physicality of being with other high school students, right?
Wow.
That they really miss it. And so, yes, adolescence is absolutely a very tough time, that sort of high school age when they really want to be out in groups. Another hard age, I think, actually is the younger kids who can't engage well with online learning. So it's not really, it doesn't feel that need for them the way that your fifth grader feels all connected with his friends by playing on online with them, right? A 5 or 6 or 8 year old even has to have, again, that physical contact of, playing soccer together or, being in the same room with peers. So I think on both ends of that barbell, there's a definite need. And then there's, of course, the temperament overlay, right? Some of our kids are just extroverts and they have to be there. And some of them are like, oh my gosh, I don't have to be interact. And especially for kids, maybe your kids are having, especially kids who have a learning on disability or who have social issues in school. I've heard some people also say, you know what, prom's canceled. That's okay with me. We also still need to stay attuned to those kids because it's going to be hard for all of us. Human beings are social animals. We want to be with other humans and more than just the ones we're related to and in a germ family with. So we need to always just be checking in with our kids, even our really happy, stoic ones who seem to be doing great. This week, it may be different next week. So
Yeah.
it's a time when connection has never been more important. And it can be very quick, the sort of, check-in, 10-second, 30-second check-in. We've started doing Rose, Thorn, and Bud every night to just, reflect on what you liked about the day, what was hard for you, and what you're looking forward to.
I've never heard that. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful
Is
tradition.
this
And
like
it's
rock, paper, scissors?
super quick. So the
Rose,
rose.
thorn, and bud.
Yeah. So you share the rose that you enjoyed about the day, the thorn that was hard, and the bud that you're looking forward to.
Oh, that's
And it's,
great.
yeah, and especially right now, that bud, it can be hard. The days all seem the same,
Yeah,
right?
they
It can
do,
be
don't
hard
they?
to think about things to look forward to. So that also gives us a little opportunity to reflect and maybe plan some things that we
Yeah,
enjoy.
that's interesting. I left a notebook out on our island in the kitchen, and every day I write the date and I write our four names, so mom, dad, and the two kids. And you're supposed to write down three things you're grateful for. And there have been days where it's like coffee, wine, and wine for one of the adults. But it is interesting to look back and see what the kids have sometimes begrudgingly written down. And they're very small moments, and that's been very telling. And then there are days where the entire family says, we're not grateful today. We move on to the next day, and that's
Yeah.
okay too.
I like that. I may steal that tradition.
Oh, do it. Well, I'll take your rock thorn bud, and you take that one, and rose thorn bud, and we'll continue the thread. But anything that kind of provides a little memento too, I think of this time will be interesting to look at. Let me ask you though, when you think about these different ages and especially the mental health aspect, do you worry about what's happening in homes right now? Because that was part of your research that was in the book that really made an impact with me was the amount of kids, especially at the high school level, who say that they experience depression on a regular basis due to a variety of reasons. But now you throw in a quarantine, and I gotta think it's off the hook.
Yes, and I'm going to steal one of my husband's lines, which is that he's con that I'm concerned. So I'm trying not to be worried because fear, worry is actually going to contribute to anxiety, right? So if I'm coming from a place of fear or worry, I'm going to transmit that to my kids. But I'm concerned, and I think all parents should be concerned and attentive to what their kids need. And just in the same way we talked about with the study break, helping our kids come up with a list of things that will help them cope. It's again another really good opportunity to just broach the subject to your kids that, hey, this is a time when a lot of people feel depressed or feel anxious, and it can help to talk about it. It can help to get physical activity. It can help to take a bath. And the only person who can tell you, what that list of 10 or 12 things is you. And you can start developing that toolkit. So it's a good excuse to broach with your kids. Hey, when you're feeling jittery or you're feeling stressed or you're feeling angry, because as I said before, anger mm-hmm. can really be a proxy for depression for our kids. What helps you? And you can experiment. And again, this might be a place where you have a notebook of I'm feeling X today and I tried this and Y didn't work, but Z did. And so it's in a sense, it's a good chance to connect with our kids around very explicitly. What are their challenges? How are they feeling in their bodies? Because that can lead to the emotions that are they're managing, and then helping them figure out, okay, yeah, you miss your friends. You wish that you could just go to the mall and get a burger or go for a run with them. And I can't even imagine what that feels like. It's like your whole skin itches probably, or you feel like you're just jumping out of your body. So you can't do that. What could you do instead? And then start the brainstorming when they're ready for it, right? You can't always move immediately from the emotion that's so overwhelming, but at some point moving into, hey, you know, yesterday you were just so really struggling with staying at home. Can we talk about what might help you when, you know, and it could be something as simple as going back to coloring or, you know, art or music. I just saw something about singing out loud and using our lungs and filling our lungs and singing together or dancing around the kitchen. All those things can be strategies for mental health. Mm-hmm. And laughter. So I guarantee when I start dancing around the kitchen, my kids get a really good dose of laughter.
I keep threatening to take up TikTok as a joke. But when this all started, my 14-year-old came to me very seriously and he said, I just need you to promise me something. And I'm like, what? And he said, well, I've observed that there is, I'm quoting this, a tendency of middle-aged moms to get on TikTok right now. You need to know it will not be well received by anyone. And he was serious. And he was right, because I have seen a lot of that. So I said, okay, so don't worry about it. That was not probably going to happen, but it definitely won't happen now if that is... It did crack me up.
At one point, my book group decided we were going to meet before everyone had a Zoom account. We decided we were going to meet on House Party, and that was terrifying. just the thought of being on the same app as me, and maybe I might drop into one of the conversations between two 16-year-olds or 8 16-year-olds. That was a scary moment.
It's pretty mortifying. I know. I think it was very interesting that you said that anger can mask depression, which as a parent, especially if you have a teenager, a lot of times that's where your discipline issues come in, is over that teen angst, anger, using a tone that isn't necessarily respectful. It's interesting to like take a breath, look at it, and really ask yourself, what were they just saying there?
Yes, it's so important. And I think it's something all of us, a lot of parents struggle with, because it's our role, right, to help them learn to manage their big emotions and to set the limits of, you can't talk to me that way. That's not acceptable. Or we don't use that language, especially not with your brother, right? So we have to find that balance between setting expectations and holding up those expectations, but also having space for in the moment, you know, in the moment, that's what they did. And probably they know it's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So it's that, again, the disconnect between in the moment, we're going to be with our kids, supporting their mental health, right? Attuning to their emotion and helping them get through it. And then half an hour later, an hour later, we're going to have the conversation. And it doesn't have to be a long one. It can just be a walk around the block, right? If your child knows the lecture is time limited, they will be more likely to participate. So it's like, you know, hey, what happened earlier today? Can we just take a quick walk around the block, 7 minutes, just to talk through what happened? And that's where we're not, again, lecturing. I use that word facetiously, because anyone who's read my book knows we're not lecturing. We're inquiring. We're asking, like, hey, it's not like you to you know, curse at your brother. So I'm guessing there was something really tough going on for you. can we talk about that? And I'm not trying to get you in trouble or go through hash it out or have you get defensive, but in the future, when you're feeling that way, what could you do instead? And we'll have to have lots of those conversations with our kids, but it's one of the hardest things as a parent to hear the door slam and not charge in there and be like, we do not slam doors in this household, right?
Yep.
Because that tells the child what? Maybe you're not a member of this family, right? Maybe you don't belong here because we don't slam doors. And they just slammed a door.
Yeah.
And that's not the message we want to send in that moment, right? They still need to feel they belong. They're okay with us. We love them. No matter how ugly their behavior gets. It doesn't mean that the behavior is okay. It just means that the behavior is not bad enough to break our love for them.
Yeah. I have a friend on Instagram who has been posting things about how her two kids have never gotten along better than when they've been stuck at home. And I have had to stop looking at her page because that is not my experience.
Yes.
I did foolishly think, well, if that's all they've got. In fact, I think I actually said it. He's all you've got right now. But that doesn't necessarily make for, a copacetic relationship between siblings. Are you hearing a lot of people talking about siblings squabbling and what's really going on behind that?
Yes. So I first want to recognize and acknowledge your wisdom. Stopping looking at the Instagram page because...
she's got to be lying, don't you think?
Well, I have to say, though,
drinking? What's going on there?
It's probably that one thing that's working, right?
Yeah.
And we only share the one thing that's working.
True.
So
that's true.
If you look at my Instagram feed, and I apologize for any of you whose children will not do chores, it's all my kids' dinners that they've made because
that's
one of the things that is working for us, right? So just also remember that, and good to separate yourself from the trigger that was driving you crazy.
Right.
It's interesting. I was just talking to a mom of four who was saying that she can hear the kids squabbling and she just sits on her hands because she says exactly that. They have to get along. They have no one else to play with. And especially for the little kids, I think that's really true because they need that physical play. As we were talking about before, they want that in-person interaction. But if you have one child who is perfectly happy to do online games or to be on FaceTime with all her girlfriends, because I know a lot of middle school girls also are in heaven. It's mm-hmm. like all day long, all they do is, Snapchat and FaceTime with their friends. So you may have one sibling who's there, who's happy, and the other one doesn't have that outlet.
Yeah.
And it maybe would want to connect, but doesn't necessarily have the skills to connect in a non-aggressive or in a way that's well received. So that's where
I have boys. Non-aggressive is perfect. It's all man on man here.
Yes. And and that's something I had to learn early also with my kids is when they are physically fighting, actually sometimes that's entertainment.
Yeah.
So we can do a few things with sibling relationships. Number one is encourage together time. So that can be kicking them out of the house to go play frisbee or go for a bike ride or, something where they don't have that screen outlet to connect with other peers, or asking them to do something together, to have a joint project, or even being involved in we play a lot of games, board games. So if you're the third person in that three-person game, you can sometimes be the glue that helps them to develop those bonds.
Right.
But ultimately, if we can do the things that encourage the relationship and just bite our tongue the things that we would love to not see, because they have to work out those rough edges, right? If they have conflicts, they're going to have conflicts, and it's great practice.
Yeah.
I often talk with my husband about, sibling squabbles. It's like little bear cubs or puppy dogs where they're just rolling around and you think they're fighting, but it's play.
Yeah.
Or it's communication. It's figuring out limits and figuring out how do you negotiate? If I give you some of my peeps, will you give me some of your Cadbury cream eggs? Okay. How about a half a Cadbury cream egg for three peeps? And that's a really,
you're learning math. Cool problem. There you go. Common core.
Right.
It's homeschooling.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of trying to reframe some of the negativity that we observe as learning, experimenting, puppy dogs, bear cubs, so that we don't start to go down that rabbit hole of they'll never be friends and they're going to hate each other for life. And then when we can, to encourage the togetherness.
Yeah. We talked earlier about forced togetherness, and as a I've been a working mom since my kids were born, and I've always romanticized how much better a mother I would be if I was home all the time. And you're nodding because I know every mother does this, whether you work outside the home or you don't. But I've always thought that my issue was purely time and energy. And what I have learned in the last month is it has nothing to do with it. I mean, it has a little, but it's not everything. So it's been interesting for me as a parent to have this little forced time out because I am around them a lot more and at different times of the day. And it has changed the relationship, but it also, I think, has been good for my kids to see me working, you
Yes.
know? And, you know, with my job, when they come to visit me at a TV station, they see TVs on someone's desk and they think we just sit around watching TV all day, which we do, but there's a lot of other work that's going on at the same time. So it's been interesting for my kids to actually see what I do for a living in a completely different kind of way. It's been an unusual month for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And this summer, I don't know what's going to happen with camps and all the sort of service work that we had thought the kids would be
Sure.
doing, but I may enlist one of them as a paid intern because I think it is a nice opportunity for them to better appreciate the ins and outs of a career, even if it has to be mine, and to know that we do something other than get in the car and drive away, right?
Right. Yeah, no, you're
Actually, we're
right.
doing things, so it can be a really good opportunity. And it's funny when you were talking about the sort of romanticizing the other side, right?
Right.
I will always remember when I was Odyssey of the Mind coach for my daughter's team. One of the little girls that I was walking out of the building. So I dropped off some of the kids at aftercare, and then I was walking the other kids out to the front of the building to get picked up. And one of the little girls, as I dropped off the kids for the aftercare in the school, she said, "Oh, it always looks like so much fun, but I can't go to aftercare because my mom doesn't work.
Yep.
So I have to go home, and I have a stay-at-home mom." And it's one of those things that we always think the grass is greener,
It's so
right, on the
true.
other side. Whereas my kids were like, "Why do we have to go to aftercare? We
Yep.
want to just come home with you." And it's good for us all to have a little taste of what we thought would be perfection and realize that there's trade-offs no matter what path you
Yeah.
take.
I promise I'll let you go, although I could talk to you all day. There's one more thing I wanted to bring up with you, and that is we have, as you mentioned, like looking at the future of summer camps and activities, we've had a total pause on youth sports in this country for the first time ever, really.
Right.
But especially in the last 20 years, where the youth sports culture has completely changed the way we run our families, the way we structure our jobs, the way we do life, we have put a pause on it. And I have heard so many friends talk about the fact that they are not at swim, at soccer, shuttling to tennis, and how much time is in their day, and how much their kids have said they're enjoying the break from it. And I've found it really interesting.
Yes, thing to come out of this really difficult time is just a rethink of how we structure all of those activities, because they don't have to be over the top, right? You can have lots of different levels of performance and time, quite frankly. So I hope that families will take this as an opportunity to really think through. And even leagues might think through, okay, how far do we want to ask parents to travel, right? Can we be maybe a little bit more narrowly geographically focused so that it's easier to get together and it doesn't take the whole day or the whole weekend, right? Because a lot of that is driven, frankly, by economics, right? Not so much really that the kids have to be competing at exactly the same level of skill, right? It can be about the cities that want to host the tournament and the hotels that want people to stay there. So, I was just reading this wonderful book about habit, Good Habits, Bad Habits by Wendy Wood. And she talks about habit discontinuity. And when your usual routine is disrupted, obviously it's very hard for us as humans. Something like 45% of our days and up to 80% of our actions are habitual. So when that's just thrown out the window, it's hard to adjust to. And it can be an opportunity to really rethink what's important and to create new habits and new routines based in our values and based in what's right for us. So I would encourage parents to, even after we return to this new sense of normalcy, to hold on to the things that we've discovered are working for us, right? The new routines and the new habits that are going to be the foundation for our kids' mental and physical health. Number one on that list, all the research tells us, is the connection between the parent and the child and our attunement to their energy and their mental health and helping them to work through all of these challenges of growing up and becoming capable and independent young adults.
Maybe parents cut yourself a little slack right now.
Right. And, you know, by cut yourself slack, I would say be present, right? And when you can be, don't try to be there 24/7, always hovering, always being that responsive parent. But we all need good separation between work and home right now because it's the same place, right? So be willing to say, okay, it's 6 o'clock. We're going to have until 7:30 with zero cell phones or email, and be really clear with your that. And, you know, I love special time. It's mm-hmm. one-on-one time that's scheduled. So we have a 3 o'clock family walk every day. And there are some days when I can't do it because I have to take a certain work call. But if I do have to bump it, we'll reschedule it for another time. And I personally hope that that daily family walk stays, even if it has to be at 8:30 at night after like play practice and soccer and all the other things that happen, because that has been a wonderful new thing in our lives.
Isn't it funny how much fun walking is and just how they talk? It's so funny.
Well, my kids love still being on a scooter.
Yes.
So I walk, and I walk fast now because they're on scooters. And that's a really neat juxtaposition for us. So that's our new routine.
I've enjoyed it. All right. So tell people where to keep up with you these days.
Well, of course, my website is a great one-stop shop. It's KatherineRLewis.com. And I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I love to hear from readers. And especially now, I've been starting to pull together some material for a new project, and I'd love to hear specific reader questions or listener questions, because I'm hoping to do more troubleshooting and more responsive answers. So please reach out to me there.
I love it. And the book is The Good News About Bad Behavior by Katherine Reynolds Lewis. And what's the best place to buy it these days? Where is it available?
It should be available anywhere. There's a wonderful initiative for independent bookstores called Bookshop that will pull all the independent bookstores in your area to see who has a title. And then, of course, the usual online retailers have it as well.
Awesome.
And Audible and ebook.
So. Oh, I love that. That's a great one, too. Well, Katherine, thank you so much. I sure appreciate you joining us. I wish you best of luck, not only with this book. I know you had a million speaking engagements planned, and I assume those are on hold for a little while.
Yes, unfortunately, but I'm still doing virtual speaking. So definitely check out my website because there will be some webinars coming up.
Maybe you should be doing like one-on-one coaching because I feel much better after our conversation today.
I will coach you anytime, dear.
I appreciate it. I'm a work in progress, that's for sure.
Oh, we all are.
Katherine, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I so love talking to Katherine Reynolds Lewis. I just love her insight. I love the way she looks at parenting. And I love that it's based on science. And it's based on the experience of talking to a lot of people. But there's a lot of science that's gone into the theories that she talks about in her book. So if you haven't read it yet, it's The Good News About Bad Behavior. And it's really just a wonderful book about parenting in this day and age, because this generation of kids we're raising truly is different than any other generation before. Even though we all said it, they truly are. And add on top of it now that they're having to go through a pandemic. And it's really creating some memories for their childhood that will be unlike anything that we ever went through, that's for sure. That other book that Katherine mentioned that I also think sounds really good is called Good Habits, Bad Habits. It's by Wendy Wood. She is a professor of psychology at the University of Southern California. So that one sounds like would be a good one to pick up as well if you're trying to get more reading in during the quarantine, which I think a lot of people are. If you have a minute, if you could go to the comment section wherever you're listening to the podcast right now and leave us a rating or review, I would sure appreciate it. It is the fastest way to grow a podcast. And quite honestly, I am not doing a whole lot of podcast promotion right now. I got too much going on. got to cook. I got to clean. These people eat three times a day. I feel like that's all I do is do, you know, meals and laundry in addition to working and all the other stuff, too. So if you could help out with that, I sure would appreciate it. Let people know about the show. Or if you could even screenshot the episode and share it on social, that's a great way to do it, too. Hang in there. Stay fit. Stay sane. Stay safe. Stay healthy. All the good stuff. And we'll talk to you next time on Dying to Ask.